Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You have 17 voice messages. First voice message.
What's going on, dude? You son of a bitch. Yes, no.
You can't stop it.
I just said that today.
End of message.
I got a big plan. Big idea, bro. Big idea.
Message erased. Next message.
We're still here.
Enjoy it. It's ODG, Occupy Dave and Giggles.
End of message. Next message.
Seriously, guys, Fort.
You know we do a radio show, right?
I just want to say that we never claim to be a comedy show. We just entertain.
You son of a bitch. I'm freaking out. Freaking out. You look so good right now.
Give me a chant you want to leave.
Dave and Giggles.
Dave and Giggles.
Really big.
Message erased.
Tell me what the scene is here. I just walked in.
All right, Dave and Giggles.
Gonna go right into this thing because we got a caller lined up already.
Sweet.
You're really loud. Hold on. Sorry, we are Dave and Giggles. Dave's here. We got in. The lock was everything is uprooted. The entire record store upstairs is gone. They changed the locks on the front door. Everything was like crazy for a couple minutes, but I am in now.
So you couldn't get in.
I couldn't get in, no. Everything was not. They have a lockbox outside, and they gave us everybody the code, and the lockbox will not open. It's like jammed, rusted shut.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad.
It sounds terrible.
It's rough, and it's pouring.
I was waiting for you. I called a buddy of mine because I was just like, I had to talk to somebody at 5 o'clock. I was like, all right, Dave can't get into the radio show. I got to call somebody.
Yeah, you need somebody.
I'm ready to talk.
You need somebody. Well, we got, it's pouring out here too. So I'm outside trying to like hold my umbrella while trying to fidget with a freaking lockbox. I'm sitting in a short chair here. Well, we do have somebody on the line. Hello, is anybody there? But that lucky hello? Are you there? Caller, are you there?
Yeah, apparently they told me to call at 7:10. It's pretty close.
I love it. All right. So, what's your name and give us a little background on you?
So I'm Michael Smith, and I'm with the Paranormal Night Stalker.
Beautiful.
We have a podcast, and Joe and I, he's supposed to be calling in a little bit. We've been doing investigation stuff for over 20 years.
Gotcha. Okay, we can only have one caller at a time, and I think he is calling right now. If he is accessed to a Google Plus or like a Google Talk, he can join us on there, a Google Hangouts, and we are Dave and Giggles on there. But if not, we could probably have him join your phone call. I'm not quite sure how that would work.
Okay. Well, however you want to work it, however you want to do it.
Cool. Well we're going to talk to you right now. So this is our Halloween show, and we got a guy who does a paranormal. Why don't you give us a rundown of the show you guys do?
Well, we do a podcast. It's the Paranormal Night Stalker, and we're on iTunes. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. If you just Google the Paranormal Night Stalker, and our stuff will come up. We've been doing the podcast now. It's fairly new for us for about 3 months, but before that, we really did paranormal investigation and research for quite a number of years, both together and separately before that. We kind of got together and did it. Of course, he moved. He lives in Canada now. I live in South Carolina, so we do our thing, but we do it kind of long distance. We work on things together over, you know, on the phone with people or on the internet, however we need to contact with them. And then we both go out and do separate investigations, of course, in our respective areas.
So you go out and you do investigations. What type of investigations are you doing these days?
Well, I'm actually working on one. There's a in one of the state parks here, there's a castle that was built by Archer Huntington before World War II. And it's a big place, 40 rooms. It's at Myrtle Beach. It's at Huntington Beach State Park. Actually, okay. If you've heard of it, his wife, Anna, was a famous sculptor. And she did her sculpting there. And a lot of things happened there. It was, of course, before that, you know, there was the local inhabitants, and there's always been reports of activity there. So I've been kind of investigating that. It's like a 40-room castle, so it's quite large.
So did you get, permission to get in there and, do, a weekend lock-in type thing? What type of research do you do?
Well, it's open to the public, and so anybody can go in there. And they don't mind people doing investigations in there, so you can do them pretty much whenever they're open. And you can even go in after, but you have to pay for that.
It's kind of okay.
But actually, I've gathered many electronic voice phenomena, if you're familiar with that.
It's sure.
Supposedly spirits of voices of spirits on tape.
Yep.
And I've gotten several, many of those from there.
What is anything recognizable? Can you hear any words, or is it just kind of like mumbling?
Oh no, it's some of those are quite clear, and we have one photo that we got a few years back. We were taking a picture down one of the corridors, facing into a room, and there was nothing in the doorway at the time. And we got home and looked on the big screen at the photos and saw that in the doorway was not one of a woman. It looked like a mist, like a white mist.
Sure.
It was fully formed. You could see the head, shoulders, dress, all the way down to the ankles.
So you got a full...
I'm not saying I know what exactly that is.
A full apparition of a ghost.
Yeah. And there was nothing... We couldn't see it with our eyes. Whatever was there, we didn't see it, but the camera picked it up. So it was some kind of a light anomaly that we captured.
Weird. So let me ask you this. Before you started doing all this stuff, were you always into ghosts, or is it something happened to you along the way and you were like, all right, now I got to investigate this stuff?
Well, actually, yeah, I kind of had some things happen. I think probably the first thing that I ever had, family, and I forget where we were exactly at. We were doing the summer kind of road trip thing, you know?
All right.
And, we were at this historic home, and I said to my mom, I said, who's the lady on the steps? And nobody saw her but me. It was a little old lady in a black, long, old-timey dress going up these real narrow stairs, and she didn't see anybody. So we got to the top of the steps, and there was a picture of this old woman in that black dress in the photograph. I said, that's the lady I saw there. And they had a person that worked there, like a caretaker or something, you know, to keep the place in line or whatever. And she said that woman was someone that lived there in the 1800s. And that was the first time I'd had anything happen. And after that, I'd always been interested. So I started doing my own kind of thing, researching it. That was even before there was internet.
Sure.
You couldn't go online.
A long time ago.
I had to use actual books. To look things up. And so I kind of got into it. And then later on, of course, I met Joe just by chance through a mutual friend. And we started doing things together. You know, they would have investigations. I would do research. And we've been doing that ever since. And we started doing it together back in 2008, I think it was.
So they can find, we can find your podcast on iTunes, and it's called Paranormal. What is it called again?
The Paranormal Night Stalker. If you look up Paranormal Night Stalker.
Paranormal Mike Stalker. Night Stalker, sorry. Yeah. Paranormal Night Stalker. And you guys have a lot of podcasts already in the can, so to speak. So you've already done a lot of research, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. We're constantly doing stuff. I mean, we're working on EVP theories and different things. And, you know, we never stop working on it. There's always something to look at different. You know, because it's still really, nobody has any answers, and we don't claim to.
No,
we're always investigating.
But let me ask you this: if this exists, and like I'm of the believer that like of the X-Files, I want to believe. You know, I want to believe. But like if we've had, you know, all this technology for so long, how come we haven't caught anything substantial to say, okay, this is a ghost? Like, what? Where is the real proof?
So I think part of it is we don't really understand if it exists, and I'll preface that because, like I said, I don't have the answers
right.
either. If it exists, we really don't have a good idea of what kind of energy it is.
Right.
Because if you look at a simple haunting, for example, like say it's a person that died and their spirit comes back.
Simple haunting, right?
How does you know a human haunting, a person dies
right,
and they
right.
come back to the place.
Go ahead. I get it. I'm just kind of reiterating.
How does a person's consciousness survive death of the physical body? You know, there are many questions that you would have to answer.
Sure, you're talking like life questions here. What happens when we die? Does energy get trapped here? Does it manifest into the real world? These are like giant questions that we'll probably never know the answer to. But
most probably you're right.
Right. But you're out there investigating, which is awesome. You've had on some people.
Everybody looks at the thing of thermodynamics. The second law of the laws of thermodynamics say that energy doesn't die. It only changes form.
Right. Which I agree with. I agree with that. I think that when we die, our energy kind of gets dispersed, goes somewhere else, gets out into the atmosphere, wherever it's going to go. So I'm under the belief of that, so that it's possible that this energy can manifest into something else or take another whatever it's going to be. So I'm with you on that.
Because we don't know how it works or what it is, we can't say for sure how it does it. We can't discount it.
No, we cannot.
How it works, what it was, you could test it. Find a way to test it and either prove it or disprove it.
Yeah.
If you can quantify what it is, then you really can't test for it.
Right.
And but none of the equipment that people use is really designed for that purpose.
No.
I mean, there's no tool you can buy to go find a spirit, you know, an EMF meter looking
right.
for electromagnetic field energy. You know, that's what it does.
Right.
A voice recorder records sounds and voices.
Exactly.
But we're using tools that weren't designed for that purpose. And, you know, some people call it pseudoscience. I mean, the way it actually is, because there is no science that can qualify what it is.
Right.
Now, parapsychology is a whole different thing. It gets into, like, you know, psychokinesis, telepathy, and all those things. And those things are different.
Right.
It overlaps, but it's not the same thing. So, you know, there's a lot to it, and
there is.
There really aren't answers. If someone tells you they know all there is to know about it, they're lying. And there are no experts.
There are no experts. There's no experts of the dead, my friend.
You know,
all right, buddy. We got to catch your podcast, Paranormal Night Stalker. We appreciate the call, and we'll get back to it, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for calling, man. We had a late start, so everything got a little shuffled around. We just had to get on to the next thing, but I really appreciate your call. Paranormal Night Stalkers, find it on iTunes. Go check them out. I was listening to one show where you had on some kind of medium talking about her powers of being a medium. Pretty damn interesting. I like it.
Very much. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, buddy. All right. You know, right. You can't win them all the time, you know?
No, we just didn't get a start. You know,
we didn't get a start.
I like having a little time with you.
I know.
The callers come in.
I know.
We just got bombarded with calls, bro.
I know. As soon as
didn't know what to do.
As soon as I got on with you.
That's why we need an intern.
I know.
We've already said this. We need an intern.
We do.
We need just somebody there, like manning the phones.
Yep.
Because I feel like it was nice talking to this guy, but we had a couple good callers coming in.
Yeah.
That we probably, just, you know.
Probably. You know, like that's the thing about having a one caller system. You're going to miss a lot. You're going to miss a lot, or if nobody calls, you're going to not miss anything. But whatever. Right. We're here. We're in. We're rocking and rolling. Did you get to watch that movie that I that's going to happen in a little bit?
A little bit.
Me too.
I didn't know what was happening in the beginning.
Yeah.
I was watching it for a little bit. It took me a minute to realize.
Once you get into it a little bit. On. So we're going to have on, what's the name of the movie again? You didn't have it set up? Oh, no. This is not good. He's going to call in. We're going to be all over the place. Let's see. He was just texting me before. So Dennis is going to call in. And they made a movie back in 2002 called As an Act of Protest. That's the name of the movie. And I believe the director is going to call in. And it was the one thing that I want to find out about. It was banned in New York City, and I want to know why it was banned in New York City.
Seriously?
Yeah. So, like, I don't know why. So that's what interests me enough to talk to the guy. So he's going to call in a little later, probably like 10, 15 minutes, and we'll give a rundown on that. But neither of us, I don't think, watched the full movie, so we're going to have a hard time talking to him. But we're going to make it happen.
Yeah, it might not be the best
interview
if we haven't seen the whole movie.
Right.
But I'm sure he'll talk about it and give us the rundown.
All right. I feel a little bit more.
I didn't know it was sort of a documentary style.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of got like a documentary style, but it's that early 2000s documentary style where it's like obviously, you know, written feature and they try to follow people around. It's fine. We'll get into it when he calls in, but what's going on with you? Give me the rundown. What's happening?
It's fall, man. Like
fall.
October activities. We've been taking the kids trick-or-treating like 3 days in a row.
Wait, why do they do trick-or-treating like 3 days in a row?
I want candy. I want candy.
I know.
I was like, stop.
It's crack.
I was like, you got to eat something else besides candy.
Candy's way better.
Like, I want a piece of candy.
Oh, and man. Like they're addicted.
It's the art of collecting. I was like, you don't have to eat every piece of every like little station you go to, you know?
Yeah.
Like we went to this wildlife thing, this great place. And they had a little thing, but in order to get a piece of candy, you had to answer a question about nature. You had to kind of fill in the blank.
Okay.
It's great. You know,
so it's
you,
a little like, reward.
Had to participate
reward
in the nature
candy.
Tour.
All right. So get, what like, were some of the questions?
Candy. Just like about beavers and trash. And, you know, like natural environments.
Did you tell them your beaver story of when it attacked you?
No, I didn't get into the beaver attack, but I was nailing the trivia questions. So like, cause you had to kind of nail a trivia question, you know,
but these are questions
for
children.
It was the one time I felt like I could feel like, you know, like, superior as far as like,
well, you felt superior about questions for children, and you were getting candy and you were eating it, and you were like sitting like a pig and shit, going, "This is the best day ever. I am the smartest person in the world, and I have my candy.
Totally.
This is great."
Yeah.
So what is with this new trend of Halloween being like pretty much all of October
six
now?
6 day festival.
Yeah. What's happening?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, it's like fall activity. It's like beer and pumpkins and fall. I don't know. I think that the colors of the trees are really nice, and you want to take photos of each other, and you just kind of want to be like, "All right, ready for winter."
Ready
for
winter.
It's like the
bearing
ready
down
for winter. Get getting out the holiday cards.
Yeah,
you know,
it's really wild.
Christmas holiday cards. I was networking like a mofo last night. Like last night was our neighborhood's Halloween sort of celebration.
Yeah,
call it trick or drink, and you go around, and there's like a map of the neighborhood, and they got, you know, people's addresses, and you can show up and they give you like a little beverage and, you know,
nice.
Like a little, like, you know, some stew or some tacos, and, you know, you just get to know everybody.
This is on your block.
So, yeah, that's, all in my whole neighborhood.
That's,
you know,
pretty
like a
good
square, a couple of miles or whatever. And it was great because, like, I took out business cards and I took my camera and I was, like, snapping photos. And I was like, bro, this is prime networking.
It is.
I was like, hey, you know.
So, it is prime networking.
It was great.
That is good. How many business cards do you hand out?
Probably 10.
That's pretty good.
You know?
That's pretty
good.
Like
a good 10 just to be like, hey, man, I'm the photographer in this hood. I'm the guy.
Right.
That's what I kind of want people to know.
That's
you know?
Pretty great.
I'm the video guy.
I am the photographer. Don't let anyone else come into this neighborhood.
This is news before news. So I got a news before news story.
Okay.
I don't know if you know this.
All right, we have a caller, but let's go do your news before news.
Take the caller.
Well, I don't know who the caller is. It might be the filmmaker. So I, Dennis, is that you? Caller, you there? Nobody's there. So, all right, go on with your show. And hang up, and then they'll call back.
I filmed the haunted house. So our neighborhood, some neighbors do a haunted house.
Yeah,
and it's great because it's like they have like a 3-car garage, and they like set it up and. You know, this year's theme was haunted clowns, like scary clowns. So I took the old camera on the old stabilizer and like walked through it. And so I got footage, which is going to air on a local news station tonight.
Oh,
so I think that's pretty cool.
That is huge.
Yeah. I was like, you know, it's Saturday, man. Let's like do this. You know, like I am here to make friends, but I'm really not here to make friends.
I'm here to be your photographer.
I'm here to be the guy, you know.
So,
the guy that captures
Are you going to? You got to get this footage off of the news. I want to see your footage and send it to me. I want to see what it looks like.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
I'll air at 9 tonight, so 9 Mountain Time, which would be 11 Eastern Time.
That's pretty good.
Dave's in New York, and Giggles is in Colorado.
That's true.
So
we are Dave and Giggles. Yeah. This is Radio Free Brooklyn. We're here with you till 8 o'clock. And my question is this, why is the theme, I feel like the theme in general of this Halloween is mad crazy clowns, right? I mean, it was kind of a thing.
Clowns are scary.
Clowns are scary. They are.
Killer clowns from outer space.
Sure.
That's a terrifying movie. Like that kind of made me a little scared of clowns.
That was a terrifying
movie. Evil clowns, because you already have the makeup, you know, and you can just add the teeth. If you add the teeth and then you add sort of like a eye makeup, you know, like it's just scary.
What what frightens your kids? Like, what have they watched anything that really scared the hell out of them, or like are they just scared in general of anything?
Because
I feel like I'm going to say
really. We don't really
the new rise in clown horror, I think is popularized by Donald Trump. I'm going to say it. I think it was Donald Trump who like made this clown craze a thing again because he looks like a goddamn clown. He's running a clown circus. Yeah. The whole thing is just a madhouse of clowns.
It is a madhouse. I was trying to imagine how his sort of his branch works. Like what do they do in their meetings? Like, oh God, if like you could have like video footage of them in their meetings,
it'd be terrible.
Just kind of like. You know,
it's a lot of people telling him he's great, he's beautiful, he's wonderful, he's fantastic, just all over and over again. Caller, what's happening? What's going on, buddy?
Hello, this is Dennis Leroy Kangaly. How are you,
Dennis? What's going on, man? What's a good word?
Nothing much, nothing much. It's it's dealing with this weather. Beautiful, rainy night.
It's pretty awful out there. It is really awful. But our my co-host is in Colorado, so he's got wonderful weather. He's got perfect fall weather while we're stuck.
Oh, man.
You know?
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, let's get to it. You were the director of As an Act of Protest, correct?
Correct. Correct.
So tell us a little bit about As an Act of Protest and your facility and the whole thing and the whole spiel of it. Let's get that out of the way.
Okay. Well, yeah, I had made As an Act of Protest in 2001. Ago, and this was pretty much a result. It was pretty much my response to the Giuliani administration, really.
Sure.
In terms of the police brutality incidences that were occurring primarily in New York and at things, the time during the 90s.
Things have changed so much, haven't they, Dennis?
Oh, boy. I mean, it's incredible, you know, how relevant the film still is.
Right.
You know, the movie is basically really a psychological exploration of the effects
right.
of racism.
Sure.
And police brutality and how it affects this one young the main character is a young black actor.
Sure.
And he's sort of trying to figure out, you know, what to do with himself. You know, should he use his art to address these things or should he get more directly involved?
Right. Which is I think something that like is a struggle for everyone. Like I mean,
yes,
especially in this day and age, like you're dealing with like we were just talking about this clown circus of a political arena where it's so oppressive that it's impossible to ignore. So,
well, that's the thing. Yeah, exactly. It's overwhelming
it
almost.
Is.
I mean, you know, and you don't really know what to do.
Right. So do you go about your business and like work
exactly.
your daily life? And do you get involved in like doing anything? I guess to the extent, like the only thing that I could say on our part is that we do talk about it on the radio show from time to time, discuss our anger, discuss our rage, whatever it's going to be. So, I mean, there is that, but I mean, is that enough? Is anything really enough? Like, what can we do? So where do you stand now? Do you still feel like the film holds up to like where it was in 2002? Where do you have any like?
Yeah, I think you know what had happened was Christopher Everett, the distributor now of the movie, who works with Speller Street Films. It was right after the Philando Castile incident, and once that the Minnesota cop had gotten let off, he had told me, he said, you know, I keep thinking about your film as an act of protest,
right.
And he said, you know, we got to try to get it back out there. And I, you know, it, you know, Dave, it's funny because to make art or to do something that you feel can have an effect or an influence, I mean, you never really know, you know, how anything is going to be received,
right.
You know, whether you're being creative or not.
Sure.
And half the time, you know, you're thinking, you know, what am I really doing anyway?
Right.
But I do believe now more than ever, actually, we need more types of protest art specifically. I mean, I'm actually amazed that there isn't more art in general that is directly speaking to the times that we're living in. And I mean really directly speaking about it.
Well, I feel like we're very new into this kind of this upheaval, this kind of like throwback to that Vietnam protesting kind of feel where everyone's on the streets. And I do think that I have seen more. I have seen like a lot more like art come out of chaos. And
yes,
I think it will kind of flourish like the late 60s, early 70s did. And 90s to a degree where you had, you know, the Iraq war and the Desert Storm and all that. So like when you have war, it happens. That's just what happens. But the thing is, we're at war with ourselves. So that is the most interesting thing. I mean, whether or not we go to war with North Korea or Russia or China or whoever it's going to be, currently we are just at war with ourselves. And the ideology on both sides is two fingers in an ear and nobody will listen to each other.
Yeah, it's a major problem. I mean, literally nobody is listening
nobody.
To each other. And so there's no communication. You know, and that's of course obviously extremely dangerous.
Very.
And you know, there comes a point where, and the film deals with this as well. You know, there comes a point where, gosh, you know, if no one's communicating, no one is listening, obviously it escalates, and then you get violence.
Sure. Right.
Things will naturally always escalate to the point of violence. Whether it's right or wrong is a different story.
Right.
But things will always escalate to that point where language seems to have no effect whatsoever.
This is very true. And, you know, if no one's listening, people are just going to get louder and louder and louder.
Yeah.
Until we're at a point where it's just absolute chaos, riot in the streets. I think tomorrow is going to be an interesting day. We have Mueller, who's actually sent out some indictments. So there's going to be some arrests. We're going to find out. It's going to be interesting. I mean, the whole, it has become a reality show. Like it or not, it's a reality show that
you
can't.
They're going to start coming to your door.
Yeah, they are.
They're going to arrest the filmmakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
They'll take out the smart people.
I know.
It's a war on the smarts.
That's actually what's going on, guys. Exactly. It's the smart people that the conscious ones that we got to watch out for.
Very true. So your film, at one point, I think I read that it was banned in New York.
Yeah, you know, it came out, the timing was just abysmal, I got to tell you. I was literally editing the film. I had finished editing the film literally when the first tower had been hit.
Ooh.
So, in the direct aftermath of 9/11, of course, I'm trying to put out this little film. And, of course, as you know, you guys remember, Giuliani was becoming a hero.
Exactly, which didn't make any sense. Didn't make any sense.
Of course not. Of course not. And, look, there were a lot more little art houses in New York still at the time. About half of them have all disappeared.
Sure.
And, they were getting threats. I mean, I couldn't show the film at a lot of places. The Anthology Film Archives said that they would show it, because that's what they do. They'll show anything.
Right.
And they'll stand by it. But there were a lot of places that said, sorry, we cannot show this film.
You kind of got, like, blacklisted, blackballed, and it was kind of like, all right, we heard about you, we can't show your stuff in town.
Yeah, it was bad.
Wow.
It was bad. I became very depressed about it. It was just such a strange, strange, surreal time.
I bet. So what have you been doing since then? I mean, you're having a resurgence on the film.
I'm having a resurgence of the film. I mean, since then, I had kind of moved away from film. I developed myself more as a writer in the past 15 years or so. I was doing a lot of poetry at a time. Was getting more involved in that. Film in general was never something I really saw myself doing. It was just something that I felt like I had to do. I previously was from the theater.
Right.
So my whole background is, you know, I was a theater director for many years. I had left Juilliard in the late 90s. So that was my thing, was theater primarily. But once I got into film, and then once I started doing the film festival circuit. But, you know, that world is such a strange world. I was never really quite comfortable in the film milieu, so to speak. You
know,
I don't particularly like film people in general. And
I understand.
Which is very difficult.
I can understand. It takes a certain type of person to
it's
be
not really good for business.
No.
No, exactly.
I don't like your people.
Yeah, it was bad. I was just not really that sort of that type of person. You have to have the right metabolism.
You don't feel like schmoozing. You're just not into schmoozing.
Exactly. Which, of course, as you know, is the kiss of death. You got to be able to do that for yourself.
Yeah.
And I was very bad at that, you know. But now, you know, with the resurgence of the film, I've grown up, I've matured a bit, and I realize the relevancy, and I realize how important the film is. You know, for many years, I was actually very angry at the movie, and I was angry at myself for having made the film, actually, in a strange way, because I felt like, you know, I had sort of, you know, ruined my life. And to a certain degree.
So you felt like this film kind of like represented that time in your life, and you cast your own anger onto the film?
Yes, exactly.
Weird.
That's exactly what happened.
That's very interesting.
It was really weird. I mean, people have often told me it was the type of movie usually people make towards the end of their life. And not really something you do in the beginning of your life as a filmmaker. And I kind of, in a way, understood that later on, because it was such a finite type of declaration. And I began to feel, wow, you know, I've made this film, and it's riddled with so much fury. I mean, I made the movie like as if Public Enemy were about to make a film. You know what I'm saying?
No, totally.
That's the type of film. That's really what I was trying to do. Right. I was really trying to make almost like a punk record, you know, really something that was. And I thought that that also might inspire a different type of cinema. But it didn't, and I didn't know what to do. And you know, when you're young, you're in your 20s. You know, everything
you think
is so different.
Everything. Yeah,
yeah, you do. And that's good. To
no,
some
it is
degree,
good.
It's actually good. And I tell you know, I'm 41 now, so I tell younger artists now, it's good to have that fire, no matter what.
It's true.
It's good. It really is.
My co-host Giggles, he has a niece who's in her early 20s, and we have her on from time to time, and she's always claiming that she's got to figure it out. You know, like, she's got to figure it out, and she moves from one job to the next, and she's making it happen.
God bless her.
But you gotta let her make mistakes. You gotta let her fall on her own.
Absolutely.
What early 20s is.
That's how you learn. Yeah, of course.
It's good gusto.
It is.
That's 24. Absolutely. Like when you're in your 20s, you just want to do everything. You know,
yes.
You're just like, yeah.
Yes.
I'm out of school.
Yes.
Let's do this.
Yes.
But
yeah,
it's very
yeah, man. We Dave and I were talking about it the other day. It was just kind of crazy that like they filmed that guy in Staten Island.
Yes,
I forget his name. Eric Garner, the guy said he couldn't breathe. I was like, they actually had video footage of that, and the guy still got off. Like, you know, it's kind of a crazy world
live,
now,
guys.
To where like
this is the
stuff,
world now.
You know, the guy
this
down
is-
in Orlando. Trayvon, yeah, like
Trayvon.
The guy,
exactly.
He shouldn't have been shooting that guy. Like, you have no business picking a fight with that kid.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just seems like acid stuff. It just happens.
It is.
And we just kind of like
is.
Sweep it under the rug and be like, well, yeah, that's kind of America. And it's like, no,
it shouldn't be. Right.
You know? You're right. That is what we do say.
Lawless. It's not the Wild Wild West. You can't just kill people, you know?
We can't just kill people. We do not live in the Wild Wild West. It is interesting, and I think we're having a bit of, because of the whole regime of Donald Trump right now, I think we're having a bit of an open-eyed, like, understanding of the world. I mean, I'm in my late 30s, Giggles is as well. I mean, we're both, like, white guys from the suburbs, you know?
Yes,
so, like, we were kind of masked from that whole thing. We didn't see that go down in the 90s and 80s, and, like, we understood it a little bit. But we weren't really, I mean, and now, I mean, we've seen it for over the past, you know, decade or two, but like now that we're adults, and I think this goes for everybody, but now that we're adults and you see the blatant just, you know, sweeping under the rug of certain people, it's just absolutely absurd. It's just, I don't understand how as people we can allow that to happen and also just like dismiss it as a societal thing. Makes no sense.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, we've also pathologize what's normal. You know, you can't be, you can't have a normal response to anything. You know, people will say that there's something wrong with you,
right?
Which is another part of it. And the film, you know, the main character, everyone keeps, you know, asking him, you know, what's up with you?
Yeah.
You're so sensitive to these issues. Why are you so sensitive?
Right.
Why, you know, what's the matter with you? And that's how we live now, guys. I mean, it really is true. Like, you can't just sort of have a normal response. People will think there's something wrong with you.
Sure. I'm going to let him get back on. Yeah, it's very true. And in your film, you know, like, you have an actor who's going through some shit. And he just doesn't know what to do. And...
Yeah.
And so where's the screening going to take place, the next screening?
Oh, yes. So the screening is going to be at the Richard Beavers Gallery. And this is in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn. And it's being presented by the Luminal Theater, courtesy of Curtis John, who's the young man who's organized this. And he's been trying to organize a lot of different types of new independent films.
Cool.
And some political stuff and really trying to galvanize a whole new art scene. And, you know, it's been hard. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about that, about how hard it is to still do a lot of independent stuff. You know, New York has become so gentrified that, you know, it's not like how it used to be, where it was a lot easier to show a lot of independent stuff, no matter what it was.
Right. I was actually up in Harlem last night, and I was like, I haven't been up there in a really long time, and I was like, holy crap, like, there is a New York sports club, and then there's like, it's just like right around the Apollo.
Oh, yeah.
It's just absolutely crazy. I was kind of mad. Man. I was kind of mad for the Harlem people.
See, exactly. Yeah, of course. I had lived there for many years. I couldn't do it anymore. I eventually left. I got priced out anyway. But the rampant gentrification is absolutely unbelievable.
It is.
And I mean, it blows you away. I mean, and it all just, you know what though? It all kinds of fits.
Yeah.
It kind of fits with everything that we're talking about right now.
It does. But I mean, also really you look at, it does fit with everything that we're talking about, but then you also look at the gentrification of New York and it makes sense. You know, where New York is having a bit of a revitalization of, like, you know, the artist kind of movement, but it's just going to price out in a couple of years, everybody who wants to be, you know, in that art scene.
Absolutely.
So it feel like it'll be a short-lived thing, but who knows? You never
know. Yeah, I know. I agree with you. I agree. There has to be another place, you know, I mean, and again, I've talked to other artists who've left New York and you know, and because they can't afford it, of all stripes, you know, regardless of what they do. And there has to be another place, eventually, and eventually that will have to happen as well.
Right.
You know, not everything is about New York, unfortunately.
I think
New York has seen its final days.
Maybe
in terms
it's
of
tough
being a
to say.
Center.
It's tough to say because, I mean, you look at like the that's what the '70s were. I mean, New York was like a hotbed for everything.
Exactly.
Then the '80s came, and New York got destroyed.
Exactly.
And then, you know, like you had the 90s kind of like a little bit of a cleanup thing. And Donald Trump was actually a big part of that problem.
Yes, he was. Thank you very much. People forget that, too.
Yeah,
listen, man,
I know.
This guy has been around forever.
New Yorkers hate Donald Trump.
I know. Listen, he's been around for, everyone acts like he came out of nowhere.
I know.
You know,
it's true.
And no, I don't know what they're talking about.
I know.
The guy's been around forever.
He has. And
oh,
the funny thing is, the funny thing is, one thing I really took notice of, so Jersey went really strong to Donald Trump, except for a few pockets. One of the biggest pockets was Atlantic City. They voted way against him. They did not vote for him at all because he went down there and destroyed Atlantic City.
See that? Wow.
It's bizarre. I just don't understand it anymore. All right, so the film, As an Act of Protest, is showing in Brooklyn. What's the date again?
Yes, this is going to be Thursday, everyone. This Thursday, November 2nd at 7 p.m.
Cool.
And hopefully it will be the beginning of some more screenings. We're hoping it'll slowly re-galvanize the film.
Very
and,
nice.
And our goal is to obviously eventually get it out on DVD.
Cool. All right, cool. Yeah. So is there the website people can go to check it out?
Yes. As a matter of fact, you can go to asanactofprotest.com.
Cool.
That's the website for the film.
I highly encourage people to go check it out. It was
interesting. Yes.
It was because it had a really good definition of New York. Like you really got a good sense of New York. But then it was like for a while I had to adjust to being back in 2002. Like I really did. It took a little while to like, oh, I remember this time in life. So, I mean, as far as like the time and the place, it really did a good job. So congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Go check it out as an act of protest.com. I believe that's the website, right?
Thank you. Yes,
cool.
Yes, it is.
Thanks, buddy. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you, guys. Take it easy.
Later, buddy.
Be well. Peace.
Are you there with me or what? What's going on? You just nothing. Well, we got 10 minutes left, and Giggles is frozen up on me. Let's give it another whirl. I think as we sit here and talk about stuff. I'm going to try to play a little song. And I'll see if I can get Giggles back online.
Pushing through the market square. So many mothers sighing. News had just come over. We had 5 years left the science. News guy wept when he told us Earth was really dying. Cried so much that his face was wet. Then I knew he wasn't lying. I heard telephones, opera house, favorite melodies. So
you with me?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Dropped out a little bit there in the middle of that.
Yeah, we're getting dinged, bro.
We are getting dinged. Well, that went better than I thought. I felt like he had a lot of good stuff to say, and we were on the same wavelength, and everything was pretty good.
Yeah, that was a good caller.
Good caller. Well, it was a guest, yeah. Really. Our first one. Well, we had to get in a groove ourselves.
Yeah.
You know,
we need to be in the same location. Like, we just need to be together.
We do.
But you just, what is it? Like, are you afraid of coming out to Colorado and just like falling in love with it, or
just
falling,
yeah,
in love with me? Like,
I'm afraid of getting into Colorado. I'm afraid of getting into Colorado and not being able to breathe that high. Seems sketchy as shit.
Yeah.
Well, I
don't
will
like
come
the
out.
Altitude.
The altitude freaks me out, man. A mile high?
All right. So why didn't you just say this?
I'll come out. I'm going to come out.
Is this a valid excuse?
No, it's not a valid excuse. I'm going to come out. I'm going to come out soon. And I think like maybe November, December, something like that. We'll come out. We'll take the Jeep. We'll rent a Jeep. We'll go out in the mountains. Oh, look at that studio. It's looking good.
Dude, you should see my real setup.
I want to see it. Send me a picture. Yeah. Next week should be interesting. I got to figure out what I'm doing. We might need to run a rerun. I'm going down to match up with Andy.
What are you doing with him?
He's coming in to shoot something for work, and he's flying into Baltimore. So I'm going to take the train down to Baltimore and meet up with him, and it's going to be absolute crazy chaos.
So you take a train to Baltimore hang out with Andy,
yeah,
but you wouldn't take a plane to like the same distance or amount of hours.
Ugh. I'll come out there. I also have to get up to like go see my my goddaughter up in Maine. I haven't seen her in like a year and a half. I've been slacking, you know. I was having a conversation with some people who were like in their early 30s yesterday. And they were like, does it get easier? And I was like, as far as like hanging out with friends, I was like, no, it gets way harder. It's like, if you can't solidify something in the next couple of weeks, it's like, well, the rest of my year is shit, you know? And next year's kind of shit. But I'm going to come out there. I got to come out to Colorado. Maybe I'll bring Deb with me. Where's Deb?
You should. Should call her. She should call in.
She should. Did you get in all right? Michael, what's happening? What happened to you? What? Hold on. What's going on? What's going on, man?
I don't exactly remember. Are you referring to the...
The big black and blue bruise
black
on your face?
Bruise and like a slight slash here.
Yeah, what happened? You look like you got into a fight.
Is it that bad? I didn't realize it was...
You're pretty swollen up.
Yeah, it is a little swollen.
Is this from one of the shows you went to? Was there a mosh pit? Was it the 90s that got you, Michael?
I don't do the mosh pit thing anymore. No. It's I kind of had my fill of that. I went to see Proto Martyr and Weeping Icon, Brooklyn Band, at the Music Hall of Williamsburg last night. And I may have had a bit too much to drink.
It's going
to
happen.
Because on my way home, I don't remember what happened. I just remember a cop talking to me, and I had like blood on my face.
So was the cop like, we're going to take you in a drunk tank or we're just going to send you on your way?
That's what I was afraid of that, but he actually just sent me on my way.
Oh, that's a New York cop for you. We don't want to get involved in this mess. We're going to send you on your way.
Well, you know something? It's Halloween is coming up, and I got the office Halloween party, so I'm going to be dressed up as a mad scientist. I'm going to have like a little like makeup, so that'll cover that up nicely. And then
there you go.
Tuesday is actually Halloween, so it's going to be like, hey, it's, I'll say like I was attacked by a zombie or something.
There you go. What was your, I'm going to throw this out to both of you. We got a couple minutes left. Your best Halloween costume you've ever had?
I was the dude from Big Lebowski.
I was a dude last night.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was when I was starting to grow my hair out because I used to have really long hair and I realized I could, it was like kind of like shaggy, kind of like collar length.
Sure.
Then I knew I can get away with that. So. Yeah,
that is a good, when you got the long hair, it kind of fits.
Yeah.
I like, I think you were like American Psycho I saw on your Facebook page. That was nice. That was good.
Yeah, I did American Psycho. I did Don Draper, which is very similar.
It's very nice.
Basically American Psycho without the rain poncho.
Yeah.
And the axe.
Right. Yeah. Well, without the whole crazy psycho killer.
I was Travis Bickle years ago.
That's good. Did you shave your head?
No, because like he doesn't. My explanation was like his head is only shaven like towards the end of the movie.
It's true.
So I said I'm him for most of the movie. People who knew what it was thought it was amazing.
Right.
A lot of people needed it explained. And actually there were several people who were afraid of me because they thought that I was just like a weirdo walking around in an army shirt and an ugly plaid shirt.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Giggles, what was your best costume?
Maybe sophomore year of college. The girlfriend I was dating had this dance costume from when she was in high school, and it was like crazy jeweled out, and it was like this, like a female dance costume, and I was like, "I'll take that one."
So you just put on like spandex. That was your thing.
No, it was like a unitard. It was like a woman's unitard, but it was like decked out. It had like the ruffles.
I got to. Like, do you have a picture?
Beautiful.
Do you have a picture of this thing? I gotta see this thing.
Somebody has a picture of it.
That's pretty good.
It was beautiful. Like, it was, and we were in Miami, and we were going down Lincoln Road on South Beach. So that was, like, a fun place to go in costume, you know?
That's amazing. So, well, I mean, you kind of fit right into the whole Miami scene, I feel like. Like, that works.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of my...
I tried to wear my wife's pants last night, but
oh,
she wouldn't.
No.
She went against it, because I had, like, a white shirt, and then I was like, oh, man. She's like, well, I do have a pair of white pants. And I was like, let me try them on. So I tried them on. They fit. I was like, oh, sweet. I asked her. I was like,
oh, no.
How much are these pants? And she's like, why? And I was like, well, because like I may ruin them.
Oh, no.
She's like, no, you're not going to ruin.
You're not going to ruin my
pair of white pants.
Yeah, that's not
for,
good.
For like a Saturday, like, you know, costume party in the neighborhood.
That's bad.
And, you know, and
fitting into your wife's pants. That doesn't bode well. It doesn't. It doesn't really bode well.
One day out of the year, I can wear like white, you know, pants like that.
One year when I worked, we got 30 seconds left. One year when I worked at Fox, I put my a little blood dripping out of my nose and a little black eye on the side of my eye, and everyone it looked like you kind of right now, Michael, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, what happened?" And I was like, "Me and Geraldo got into a fight." That was one of my favorite things because people believed me for a minute, and then they were like, "Wait a minute."
Did he throw a chair at you?
Yeah, he threw a chair at me. Punched me outside. All right, that's it for us, Dave and Giggles, Radio Free Brooklyn. We got a Collision Course coming up next. Later, boys and girls.
Good show.